Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for words and their stories and people in America, coming up after As It Is.
Hello, and welcome back to another As It Is. Today's program is about Asia and two serious subjects. First, we hear about a plan to move over 100,000 refugees in Thailand back to Myanmar, the country formerly known as Burma. We'll have details about the plan and also hear what some experts are saying about the idea. Then, we'll hear about a new law that bans people from owning child pornography in Japan. Thailand's military government says it has reached an agreement with Myanmar, also known as Burma, for the return of refugees. The agreement calls for as many as 130,000 people to be sent back to Myanmar. The refugees fled violence and conflict in that country over many years. Rights activists oppose the move. They say refugees should not be returned until security and Myanmar's economy have improved. General Prayut Chan-o-cha leads Thailand. He has said Thailand would work with Myanmar to help the refugees that live in camps along their shared border. The general says human rights laws will be respected in the action. The refugees are mostly ethnic Karen from Myanmar. Others are members of the Karini and Shan groups. The groups have fought the Myanmar government for more self-rule. Most groups have reached agreements with the government to end the conflicts, but not all members feel it is safe for them to return. Rights groups also say they are worried about the refugees' return. They say some of the land traditionally held by the groups has been seized. Landmines are also a danger in these areas. Boji is an activist who has campaigned for the release of political prisoners in Myanmar. Boji says the border areas are not secure. Thailand's former civilian government has talked about returning refugees. But the little progress made only followed strong international criticism. Debbie Stoddard is a spokeswoman for the rights group Alternative ASEAN Network. She says the Thai military has shown it wants to solve the refugee problem since it seized power in May.
Now, I think there's quite a strong fear that this is really going to happen, especially because UN and international agencies have been working on this. The situation is still extremely fragile and dangerous. We're actually seeing more people displaced. And if you are happen to be a refugee of Muslim background, then you are particularly vulnerable.
Violence began 2 years ago in ethnic Rohingya areas of Myanmar. Tensions have increased between Buddhists and Muslims since that time. Ms. Stoddard says refugees fear they will be harmed by the Myanmar military. She says the military violates the rights of members of ethnic groups and has not been punished for such actions. She says that is why many people fled in the past. Rights groups are calling on the United Nations Refugee Agency to closely watch the situation. They say it may be too early to return the refugees to Myanmar because of cuts in aid to that country. They also say there need to be more political reforms in Myanmar. Next, we hear how Japan could become a leader in the fight against child pornography in Asia. Anna Mateo has this story.
The International Center for Missing and Exploited Children says 99 countries in the world still do not make possession of material showing children in sexual activities a crime. But now, Japan's parliament has changed that number. Japanese lawmakers have approved a measure that makes possessing such material a crime. The move comes after many years of international pressure. Some content of this story may be disquieting. Pornography, often called porn, is described as printed or visual material showing sexual activities. Child pornography is pornography showing children during these acts. Under a new Japanese law, people found guilty of possessing child pornography will be jailed for up to 1 year, or they will face financial punishment of about $10,000. Until the law passed, Japan had been the only remaining major developed country that had not banned possession of child porn. It outlawed production and distribution of such material in 1999, but making possession a crime took much longer. And nobody knows that better than a man named Ernie Allen. Mr. Allen is president and chief executive officer of the International Center for Missing and Exploited Children. He says his agency worked with Japanese officials for years to bring about this new law.
99 countries still don't criminalize possession, and they are overwhelmingly countries in Asia, Africa, and the Middle East.
Japan did take longer than other countries with similar economies to make reforms. But Mr. Allen says he hopes Japan will cause further changes around the planet, especially in Asia and Latin America. In 2002, the Center for Missing and Exploited Children started a child victim identification program. They asked law enforcement agencies from around the world to send images they received of exploited children.
2002, there were 50,000 images. By 2005, the center had received 1.9 million images. Last year alone.
The high numbers can be disturbing. But Mr. Allen says there is also a big increase in the number of countries who have enacted child porn laws, or elements of such laws. The new law in Japan is expected to take effect next month. However, punishment for owning child pornography will not be enforced for 1 year. The reason? Japan says it hopes that many people will dispose of the material on their own. I'm Anna Mateo.
And that's As It Is for today. Join us again tomorrow for another program from VOA Learning English.
Words and Their Stories is next, followed by People in America. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
Now, the VOA Special English Program, Words and Their Stories. Today, we finish telling about the interesting nicknames that have been given to the 50 American states. The state of Ohio is in the Midwest. It is named the Buckeye State after a tree that produces nuts similar to chestnuts. The Great Plains State of Oklahoma is called the Sooner State. That is because of a sale of land in 1889. Some people arrived in the territory to claim their land earlier than they were supposed to. They cheated and got there sooner. Pennsylvania's nickname is the Keystone State. Just as a keystone holds together a stone arch, Pennsylvania was seen as holding together the young American Republic. Pennsylvania is also sometimes called the Quaker State. Its founder, William Penn, and most of his followers were members of the Protestant Quaker religion. Rhode Island's nickname is Little Rhody because of its size. The state is smaller than the area around Los Angeles, California. Tennessee got its nickname, the Volunteer State, because of the bravery of its citizens. They volunteered to join Tennessean Andrew Jackson to defend the city of New Orleans, Louisiana, against the British Army in the War of 1812. Texas is called the Lone Star State. It gets its nickname from the single star on its flag. This represents the short time Texas was an independent nation battling Mexico for self-rule. The Beehive State of Utah has no more beehives than any other state. The nickname is from the Mormon Church's symbol for hard work. The eastern state of Vermont is proud of its beautiful green mountains, so it calls itself the Green Mountain State. The southern state of Virginia is called the Old Dominion. Long ago, King Charles II of England added the colony's coat of arms to his shield. It joined his other dominions of England, Ireland, and Scotland. West Virginia broke away from Virginia in the 1860s. It is called simply the Mountain State for the ancient Appalachian Mountains. And we have saved perhaps the most American nickname for last. The western state of Wyoming was once an area where cattle were transported east. And where there are cattle, there are men, and now women, to move them. So Wyoming is the cowboy state. This VOA Special English program was written by Ted Landfair. I'm Barbara Klein. We hope you enjoyed these programs about states and their nicknames. You can find more Words and Their Stories at voaspecialenglish.com. Thank you. I'm Barbara Klein.
And I'm Steve Ember with People in America in VOA Special English. In the 1850s, women in the United States began to try to gain the same rights as men. One woman was a leader in the campaign to gain women the right to vote. Susan B. Anthony was an important civil rights activist. She led the way for legal recognition of women's rights in the United States. But she did not live to see women gain the right to vote.
In 1776, a new nation declared its freedom from Britain. The Declaration of Independence was the document written to express the reasons for seeking that freedom. It stated that all men were created equal. It said that all men had the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Not every citizen of the new United States of America had one important right, however. That was the right to vote. At first, the only people permitted to vote in the United States were white men who owned property and could read. By 1860, most white male citizens over the age of 21 had the right to vote. The 14th and 15th Amendments to the Constitution gave black male citizens the right to vote. These amendments were passed in 1868 and 1870.
Women were not really full citizens in America in the 1800s. They had no economic independence. For example, everything a woman owned when she got married belonged to her husband. If a married woman worked, the money she made belonged to her husband. In addition, women had no political power. They did not have the right to vote. In the 1850s, women organized in an effort to gain voting rights. Their campaign was called the Women's Suffrage Movement. Suffrage means the right to vote. American women sought to gain that right for more than 70 years.
One of the leaders of the movement was Susan B. Anthony of Massachusetts. Ms. Anthony was a teacher. She believed that women needed economic and personal independence. She also believed that there was no hope for social improvement in the United States until women were given the same rights as men. The rights included the right to vote in public elections.
Susan B. Anthony was born in 1820. Her parents were members of the Quaker religion. She became one, too. The Quakers believed that the rights of women should be honored. They were the first religious group where women shared the leadership with men.
As a young woman, Susan had strong beliefs about justice and equality for women and for black people, and she was quick to speak out against what she believed was not just. Many young men wanted to marry her, but she could not consider marrying a man who was not as intelligent as she. She once said, "I can never understand why intelligent girls should want to marry fools just to get married. Many are willing to do so, but I am not." She did meet some young men who were intelligent. but it always seemed that they expected women to be their servants, not their equals.
Susan B. Anthony became a school teacher in New York State. She realized that women could never become full citizens without some political power. They could never get such power until they got the right to vote. She went from town to town in New York State trying to get women interested in their right to vote. But they did not seem interested. Miss Anthony felt this was because women were not able to do anything for themselves. They had no money or property of their own. The struggle seemed long and hard. She said,
"As I went from town to town, I understood more and more the evil we must fight. The evil is that women cannot change anything as long as they must depend on men for their very lives. Women cannot change anything until they themselves are independent. They cannot be free until they have the legal right to own property and to keep the money they make by working."
Miss Anthony went to every city, town, and village in New York State. She organized meetings in schools, churches, and public places. Everywhere she went, she carried pamphlets urging rights for women. She urged the lawmakers of New York to change the state law and give women the right to own property. Her campaign in New York failed at that time. But elsewhere, the struggle for women's rights was making progress.
In 1851, Susan B. Anthony met Elizabeth Cady Stanton. Mrs. Stanton also supported equal rights for women. Mrs. Stanton had many children. She needed to remain at home to raise her large family. Miss Anthony, however, was not married. She was free to travel, to speak, and to organize for the women's rights movement. The two women cooperated in leading the fight to gain rights for women in the United States. Their first important success came in 1860, when New York finally approved a married woman's law. For the first time in New York, a married woman could own property, and she had a right to the money she was paid for work she did. At last, Miss Anthony's campaign was beginning to show results. The campaign spread to other states.
The end of the American Civil War in 1865 freed black people from slavery. Susan B. Anthony felt that there was still much to be done to get full freedom for black people and also for women. She began to campaign for the right for black people and women to vote. The 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution was approved in 1868. It gave black men the right to vote, but it did not give women the right to vote.
Susan B. Anthony led efforts to have voting rights for women included in the 14th Amendment to the Constitution. Her efforts were not successful. Then Miss Anthony decided to test the legal basis of the 14th Amendment. She did this during the presidential election of 1872. On election day, Miss Anthony led a group of women to vote in Rochester, New York. 2 weeks later, Miss Anthony was arrested.
Before her trial, Susan B. Anthony traveled around New York State. She spoke to many groups about the injustice of denying women the right to vote. She said,
"Our democratic Republican government is based on the idea that every person shall have a voice and a vote in making the laws and putting them to work. It is we, the people, all the people, not just white men or men only, who formed this nation. We formed it to get liberty, not just for half of us, not just for half of our children, but for all, for women as well as men. Is the right to vote a necessary right of citizens? To my mind, it is a most important right. Without it, all other rights are nothing."
Susan B. Anthony was tried and found guilty of violating the law. She was ordered to pay $100 as a punishment. She said the law was wrong. She refused to pay. Miss Anthony then led efforts to gain voting rights for women through a new amendment to the Constitution. She traveled across the country to campaign for such an amendment until she was 75 years old. In 1904, she spoke to a committee of the United States Senate for the last time. The committee was discussing the proposal for an amendment to the Constitution giving women the right to vote. She knew the victory would come, but she also knew it would not come while she was alive.
Susan B. Anthony died in 1906 at the age of 86. 13 years later, in 1919, Congress passed the 19th Amendment to the Constitution. The amendment stated that the right to vote shall not be denied because of a person's sex. The amendment had to be approved by 3/4 of the states. It won final approval on August 26, 1920. It was called the Anthony Amendment to honor Susan B. Anthony.
This special English program was written by Shelley Gollist. It was produced by Dana Demange. I'm Barbara Klein.
And I'm Steve Ember. Transcripts and MP3 files of our programs are available online at voaspecialenglish.com. And you can find us on Facebook and YouTube at VOA Learning English. Join us again next week for People in America in VOA Special English.